Will you please find your orders of service and join me in the responsive reading found in the order of service? I'll read the primary line, and you please read the response, which is, we forgive ourselves and each other and begin again in love. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause. For each time our greed has blinded us to the needs of others.
We forgive
for the selfishness that sets us apart and alone.
We
for falling short of the animations of the Spirit. For losing sight of our unity.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
I was thinking about it the other day, and I thought, what if sometimes it wasn't something our parents did wrong, or not a good enough education, or the way we are treated by others, or all the systems in the world seemingly conspiring against us? What if sometimes we have no one to blame but ourselves? What I mean by that is, it seems sometimes we live in a world where it's easy to blame everything but ourselves. If only they would do it my way. If only they would just listen to me. If only they knew that I was right and everybody else is wrong. And if you think about it, the odds aren't in your favor that you're always right and everybody else is wrong. And of course, there is the other side of that, which is, perhaps it's the extreme side of that, where we blame ourselves for every little thing that goes wrong in the world. We're responsible for everything, of course. And if it doesn't work out, it has to be our fault. I think that may be some form of perfectionism, where we feel responsible because we feel a need to be perfect, not make any mistakes. And of course, perfection is unattainable. That's why it's called perfection. I think I've come to the conclusion that a balanced and healthy life doesn't come when we're engaged in either extreme. Either feeling right all the time or blaming ourselves all the time. It comes from being in touch with our core, with our center place. When the extremes of the voices aren't always talking in our heads and saying something that rules our days. This can also lead to times where we've traveled too far in one direction or another and perhaps hurt ourselves or others. And there are things for which we need to reflect on in order to return to the center. And we may also need a little dose of self-forgiveness. I've always felt that if we're doing our work emotionally and spiritually and growing as spiritual human beings, we continue to evolve in our understanding of our core personhood. Evolve in areas like who we are as whole people, what's meaningful for us, and how we would live life in balance. It's certainly a worthy goal, but it gets tested all the time. I think a typical worship service on forgiveness is about how forgiveness of others could really be good for ourselves and our own well-being. It's true, and I don't mean to belittle that in any way. But I think it's much more difficult for us to forgive ourselves when we turn that gaze in and examine the things that we might have done, and we might need a little extra grace for those things. When we first did the service on self-forgiveness, I think it was in 2011, it was the first time I actually talked about hearing a sermon that was delivered at the service of the living tradition at our General Assembly that has impacted me for the rest of my life. It was given by Reverend Mary Harrington. I told you at that time that the thing that stood out for me most in this sermon was her statement about how she approached life. She approached life with a question, and the question was, what is the most loving thing that I can do right now? That really struck me because, it made me think and reflect on what would I have to do in my thoughts and in my actions to live as a loving, giving human being, setting appropriate boundaries and yet doing most everything I could out of love. In some ways, this was going to be my own personal vision statement, the way I wanted to live my life, the promise I made to myself, and the center at the core of my personal philosophy. Now, just being alive tests this. It tests whether we can live and act from our personal principles and mission statements. It tests whether we are prone to anger or aggrandizement, patience or pettiness, or how we manage our levels of grace and kindness, assumptions, self-righteousness, criticism, and unfulfillable expectations. You see, it doesn't always have to be that you try to live life as a vessel of love, because there are so many things that we aspire to that we fall short on, and we struggle or we fail. We can try to live being a vessel of love, but it's really hard not to be perfect. And once again, being alive is like a petri dish for all of this. And I'm glad I'm as alive as any of you folks are. I think we're all here together. So being alive and being a minister can be really hard and can test all kinds of levels of grace and forgiveness, love and acceptance, perfection and imperfection. I can't even begin to tell you how many times I wish I hadn't said something to someone. And I can't begin to tell you how many times I wish I had said something to someone. But what we have said or not isn't only true of ministers or therapists or someone in a healing profession. It's true for all of us at some point. For all of us play certain roles. We can be son or daughter. We can be sibling or friend, spouse, or member of a culturally dominant group, or a member of a traditionally marginalized community. We speak from all kinds of roles and have all kinds of experiences where we have fallen short of our aspirations. My thoughts on some of my personal failings haven't changed much since I gave this sermon for the first time in 2011, which is incredibly disappointing. There are times where I wish I had been a better son and more able to account for and forgive the human frailties of my parents. I wish that I had been a better brother, not so immersed in my own life and a little more open to the lives of my brothers. Not to mention wishing I could have been more involved as an uncle for my four nieces and their nephews. As a friend, I know that I could have been there more for my friends in need. I can't even begin listing how I could have been a better husband. Some of you know someone who could list that. And as a straight white male, I know I could be more sensitive in my language, in my thoughts, and in my actions to those whose lifestyles, gender identities, races, ethnicities, socioeconomic positions, political persuasions in life are different than mine. So even if we have done plenty of emotional or psychological or spiritual work in our lives, and even if we have a pretty good grasp of what our core is, how can we live in touch with the things that fall short in us? I stand before you and I confess that I have fallen short and made mistakes, and I am not perfect. And I confess that because confession isn't only good for Catholics. Most of the major faiths call for some sort of confession because it's important. Yom Kippur is a good example. Confession, they say, is good for the soul. And I believe that confession is a necessary part of helping us acknowledge, forgive, and evolve our constant and never-ending practice of being human. In a sermon about the link between confession and forgiveness, a colleague of mine, Reverend Dr. Linda Anderson, wrote, "Confession from the Latin means to acknowledge together. Thus, my question," she says, "is look for the relationship between acknowledgement and forgiveness. Acknowledgement means to recognize as valid, and recognition means to admit what has happened, noting the consequences of our actions and allowing space for the feelings that arise. Most of us probably know how much harder it is to forgive or achieve any real reconciliation when we never receive acknowledgement from the other person, when we never make acknowledgement to ourselves. And then she says, often recognition prompts us to make atonement to the one whom our actions have hurt when it will not cause further harm. Often recognition teaches us something about ourselves and our effects on others, and we become more able to make adjustments in what we say and do rather than repeat the same behavior over and over in the face of the same unhappy consequences. Recognition makes it possible for us not only to express the desire not to cause harm again, but actually be empowered to change. I see this as a very important part of forgiving ourselves. The recognition that we have strayed from our hopes, our visions, our aspirations of how we desire to live our lives, and the open acknowledgement of that. This acknowledgement is actually called for in most therapeutic 12-step programs. It's the core of this familiar statement created by the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr in its supposed original form, which is this: God, give us the grace to accept with serenity the things I cannot change, that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. To me, this prayer has multiple layers of subtext. We can't always be in control. We can't always be in control. But it is immensely important for us to know, be aware of, and work through what we cannot change and have no control over. This is specifically true for things that we take responsibility for and have had nothing to do with. How many times have you taken responsibility for a situation where you punish yourself for something that's happened that you could not control or did not call onto yourself? Real life situations that many of us have been through where the words come out, "If I only had dot, 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 if I only had." So often that phrase has to do with something we never could have predicted and may never have been able to control, ever. And yet we feel responsible, and we hold on to it, and we let it nag and eat away inside. And the ability to forgive ourselves may start with that first step of acknowledgement: we couldn't have changed this, ever. I did my best, or I actually had nothing to do with this that I could be responsible for, no matter how much I am responsible for everything in the world. And it is equally as vital to know, be aware of, and work through what we can change. This takes understanding and acknowledgement, or in a different word, confession, to ourselves, if to no one else. When we stray from our core, and we confess this to ourselves or others, confess about things that we can change, then we can ask the question, can we act encouraged to forgive, evolve, and move forward? This may take form in 100 different ways every single day. We hold ourselves responsible and accountable for plenty of things that we can change. What about those of us who think, if I just work harder, or just a little better, I would be the person I need to be? Or what about judgment itself? How often do we jump to judgment or to conclusions about a person or a situation without knowing the whole story or really caring what it is? I'm not saying that we should not strive to be more patient or understanding or loving. I'm saying that we should not punish ourselves when these things occur, for we are human, which is an ongoing practice, but we need to be continually aware and open and striving to grow. Forgiving ourselves really can be an important part of that process. Being the loving community that we are, please. Here to love and support each other in our quest for fulfillment and deepening. We're going to help each other today on the road to self-forgiveness. Today, I'm going to invite you to step forward. Come down this way, and with a pinch of salt placed in the water, may you also place something you wish to forgive yourself for in the water to dissolve like salt. Salt may dissolve, but it doesn't disappear. But the water, like the love of this community, supported by the love of this congregation, will help us help forgiveness flow more freely. So as you place your salt in the water, I invite you to say, if you wish, I forgive myself and I begin again in love. I forgive myself and I begin again in love. The music will play, and I invite those of you who wish to come down, now would be a good time to do it.